Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mr. Sandman may have brought us a dream, but it was a nightmare in Lincoln as the Addicts fall to their second league defeat of the season. Welcome to Charlton Live. Charlton Live. Charlton Live. So, good evening and welcome to Charlton Live. It's Sunday, the 27th of September. I'm your host for this evening, Tom Wallin, and on tonight's podcast we have got so much to discuss. Unless you've been living underground this weekend, you'll know that Rockstar CEO Thomas Sandgaard took control of the club on Friday, ending the rollercoaster ride that has been the ESI ownership. The Dane didn't hang around, signing two players in 2 days after confirmation that our embargo has been lifted, and we'll discuss everything that has taken place over the last 3 days. We'll also, unfortunately, have to look at today's defeat to Lincoln. We'll go through your tweets and emails, discuss all things Charlton in what is probably a momentous week in the history of the club. Joining me to do just that is a man who isn't on best terms with Bowyer at the moment after a few public spats on Football Manager, Nathan Muller. Nath, how you doing?
Yeah, mate, not bad. Just eating some nuts at the moment. But I'm doing all right. There was a bit of... I don't know, it's been a strange couple of days. Obviously, with the which we're going to with the takeover, and then watching that game, which was an experience. But glad to be on. Nice to have speak to you again since Thursday.
And more importantly, how's your relationship with Bowyer doing?
Still frosty. I'm not going to lie. There was I've seen our WhatsApp group. He's come out and had a go again. Said the same thing. I asked for your opinion. You went for the more conservative approach. Louis, however, obviously wanted to put a spanner in the works, and so I listened to Louis. And I don't think I'm in Bowyer's best book still on the game. He's Rotherham manager, but hopefully we can. I'll probably get him in a cup or something. He'll probably headbutt me or something, or call me, have a little sort of that big old geezer on the touchline or whatever.
We'll hear
no, yeah, it's
Yeah, we'll hear what he had to say a bit later about a kick in the nuts during today's game, and maybe that's something he was, maybe just a little shaded threat to you, yeah, in a post-match today. And also joining us on tonight's show is making his debut for this season, I believe, is Mr. Benji Cloke. Benji, how are you doing?
Yes, good, mate. You're right. Yeah, I am feeling, making my debut. Probably feeling a lot more revitalised this season. I've watched the Doncaster game, but that was my first game I watched this season. But obviously after the news this week, feeling a lot more positive about things. Not so after the game, but look, we knew it was going to be a tough game. But yeah, definitely feeling a lot more positive this week.
Yeah, good to hear, good to hear. So, right, I don't think we can start in any other place than Friday. Just a normal day at work for me. Checking Twitter, as you do. And at 11:55, Thomas Sangard posts, "Are you ready? #SeaOfRed. Nath, I'll bring you in first at that point. I believe both you and Benji were kind of able to keep up with the events of Friday live. When that tweet goes out, obviously you spoke about it on Thursday and the tweets that he then put out suggesting maybe that if things didn't go the right way, he might consider pulling out of the race. When you see this on Friday, what is running through your head at that point?
I don't know. It's hard, really. I mean, like you said, we on Thursday we sort of talked about it, and sort of consensus was that that it could be, take a little bit longer than we obviously wanted it to. But yeah, when he sent the tweet out, I thought, "Oh, not again! Is he making a rod for his own back?" But then, obviously, all of us were on WhatsApp and that, and things were sort of grumbling and thinking, "Well, maybe it isn't." And then there was, you know, it was still coming through, and then I was still waiting for, you know, the official thing to come out. But yeah, I think at the beginning it was still disbelief, but obviously joy. But there's got to be a catch or something. That catch hasn't happened yet. Even the next day I woke up and I thought, did that actually happen? And yeah, I think it's still only starting to sink in now. As soon as obviously the signings got announced on yesterday, that's when it started sinking in. But it's just amazing, really, how quick things can change in life, which, you know, we'll go on to some sad news later, but how quickly things can change from 5 minutes waking up on Friday morning, being in the same old state of what Charlton is, and then in an instant, everything's changed. And all of the last 7 years, it's in the rear view now, and we can focus on going forward. And it was just a bit surreal. But I mean, yeah, it was just nice to see positivity on the timeline from all Charlton fans. And I think for me, it's just a shame that the situation we're at the moment with not going to football and stuff, it's happened then, because imagine the next home game, which I think Sunderland on Saturday, I think, you know, the club shop probably would have got a lot more money, and it just would have been amazing. But it's not to be, but it's a step in the right direction, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was one of the lucky ones to be there last week against Doncaster when he came out and sat in the director's box, and the reaction to him then, even with just 1,000 people in there, was pretty special, as he said himself. 12:05, so 10 minutes later, he's kept people guessing, and he tweets again, "Let's do this, #CAFC, #CharltonFans, #WearingRed, with him in a Charlton shirt playing guitar. Now, we've laughed about the rockstar CEO approach, but there's a second tweet in 10 minutes there that seems to suggest he knows something we don't. Benji, again, I'll bring you in here. You were keeping up to things kind of up to the minute as well. You see these two tweets go through. What's running through your head at this point?
Yeah, I was on a few WhatsApp groups and a few messages going about saying, have you seen what he's writing? And again, what Nath said, it did seem really surreal. Because I listened to your show on Thursday, although I wasn't on it, and I was kind of thinking, "Whoa, like we're all quite down here now, aren't we? We're all kind of thinking he's after his tweets in the week. We all seemed a bit like, oh, is this actually going to go through, etc., etc. He's got to the point where he's meeting with Roland, well, living to Turk, and he just can't seem to smash out a deal. And then suddenly this happened, and yeah, felt quite surreal. And look, fair play to him. He come over to this country a couple times and kept trying to smash through these barriers to get it through quicker than, I mean, look at the Aussies. They seem to take forever trying to get through it. But look, he's got through it in quick time. And when those messages came through, it, as Nath said, it did seem quite surreal. Well, wow, is this happening? Is this happening today? And are we going to see transfers, et cetera, et cetera? But yeah, like when that first came through 10 minutes after, I thought, wow, how is this going to happen, really? How is he going to get it done?
And that was the thing, because this is a man who several times over the past few weeks and maybe even months now has said, you know, I'm confident of getting a deal done. This is a deal I'm going to get sorted. It's going to be this week. It's going to be this week. And we know we've had the court cases that have obviously delayed things a bit. And when the latest one came in last week and whenever it was a couple of weeks ago and said the trial was set for November, it seemed impossible, although there was always this rumour of a loophole that would get him through. And I don't think we'll talk too much on the legalities of it at the moment. But 10 minutes later, as you say, everything feels very surreal. No one really knows what to believe. There's still nothing on the official site, which is what we've always said when it's on the official site. But then he posts an open letter to Charlton fans. And that appears again on his Twitter feed originally. And it says, "Today's the day. We did the impossible. We triumphed and we made it to this point because of you. Thank you for your passion, your perseverance and your patience. There is no club without you. We are Charlton Athletic Football Club. From early on, I felt we were in this together. I'm humbled by your support and honoured to officially become part of the Charlton family. The Charlton community is one of a kind. You welcomed and embraced this change of hands with more openness than many others would have given your history. Thank you for standing up for what you believe in. I will not let you down. Cheers to each of you. Cheers to Charlton. I assure you we are just getting started. We are London's club. This week and every week, we will cheer for Charlton. Sincerely, Thomas Sangard, proud owner of CAFC." I'll come back to you, Nath. Again, still nothing on the official site at this point, but you read that. Again, just what's going through your head then?
It was still... I know it's... Maybe it's because we've been burnt before, but again, it was... Surely, you know, this is good, but... Surely you do. I was expecting that, and then something in tandem with this, with the site, and then there was a bit of a time lapse, obviously, because of whatever reason. But yeah, I mean, I was still, they were still, you know, I think I was sent about 5 different messages on WhatsApp or something with that passage that you just read out, and I was still a bit dubious. I was like, well, anyone can say that, really. Not saying he's lying about it, but I'd still rather wait until, obviously, the guys at the club put something out. But yeah, that's when you first started thinking, is it actually really over? Is all of this stuff, you know, all the hard work that's gone in from, you know, from obviously Thomas and his team, and you know, all the parties involved, all the stuff that's gone on at the club, which I'm sure there's many things that obviously that's gone on. And you know, all the suffering that the fans have had, and all the work that a lot of fans have done to try and, you know, put a lot of limelight really on the club, and in recent weeks and months, and maybe it has actually come to fruition. And I mean, it's obviously worked in a way, because the deal's over the line now and it's now been announced. But I mean, it was still a bit of a pinch yourself moment, because it's hard to explain, because with the last 7 years. So on these shows, it's been so, what's the word? There's been shows which we've done it, and it's not been nice, because it's just that negative vibe. Whereas now you can actually look forward and go, this actually could be positive. We can look at the football now. We can concentrate. Let the guys do the back bit of the club, you know. Let Boya focus on the team, which it sounds like he's going to be able to do now. We'll focus on the football. We ain't every show, it's not about ownership, it's about win, lose or draw. What was the football like? That's what everyone wants to hear. No one wants to hear about legal spiel and all that sort of stuff. So it was just like a massive grey cloud that just seemed to be drifting slowly away. And then obviously the club brought it out obviously officially, and then without sounding a bit, you know, cliche, the blue sky started appearing, you know, and it's a start. Nothing's going to happen overnight, and I think we all need to recognise that. It's not going to happen overnight. I know we've made 2 signings, and we had a poor performance today, but it's not an overnight project. you know, and I think that's what we're all going to be impatient because we all just want to get back to where we were and like, understand that, but it's going to be a long process. But and yeah, but it's something to look forward to now. It's 100% something to look forward to.
We'll talk a little bit about his long-term plan in a few moments. You referenced it there, but 20 minutes after he posted that letter, the club post a Sandtimer with his guitar photo saying "Enter Sandman." And then 4 minutes later, they post the open letter, and that's it. It's on the official site. We have seen people take control of the official site and say that they've taken over before, but for once, it seemed like everyone was in unison. And Nath makes a good point there, Benji, and it's something that Thomas references in his letter as well about the fans and the part they have played in getting this deal over the line. And obviously in the years since Roland has come in, fans have done very different things, I think, in protest to the ownership. Some have continued to go, some have stayed away. There have been protests on the pitch, there have been protests off the pitch, there have been people travelling to Belgium. There's been lots of different things, and it feels like over the past few years that those different factors, if you like, although the aim for everyone has been to get Roland out of the club, those different things have felt a little bit separate from each other, perhaps. But the protests we've seen over the past few months, you know, even up into standing outside Screwfix, you know, protesting at the EFL, barging into Farnell's office, everything that's happened in the past few months feels like a united front against the ownership or ESI to make sure that we could get Thomas in. How much of a part do you think fans have played in getting the club back? And obviously not for the first time, but to get the club back under an ownership who hopefully can take us forward. How much do you think the fans deserve credit for that?
Oh, I think the fans deserve massive credit from it. Sometimes you think, look, there's only so much we can do, but making it a massive claim out there that this is what's happening to our club was just unfair, really. I think you look at the way Roland ran the club, and look, that really, that was out of our hands, but we had a wealthy guy running our club. I mean, look what happened. You had Chris Powell there managing the club and players turning up. So we had players turning up. He was spending money. But the way he was spending money was the wrong way, because we had players turning up. Chris Powell didn't even know who they were, what they were. So in that respect, it started off and we thought, oh, praise Roland. We were at a bad point at the club and he was bringing in players. Peter Prasiska, I remember, I think he was the highest paid player at the time, the transfer fee. And we thought things looked good then, didn't we? I think that was a case of, okay, let's see what happens. But in this case, it looked just totally unfair, looked totally against what the EFL should stand for, where we had these guys literally just coming into the club just to make a quick buck out of us. And there we've got Lee Bowyer, Steve Gallen, Johnny Jackson, who this literally is the best news for, in my opinion. The guys that have been working at the club under the worst circumstances, and these guys, look, are crying out, going, come on, look, can't you see what's happening? I'm trying to work under the embargo. I mean, that was the main reason we got relegated. And fans have gone the extra mile. They've protested outside of Screwfix, as you say. In the past, we've gone to Belgium. We've done a massive campaign on Twitter, which has definitely caught the eye. I've had some mates of mine who follow me on Twitter that actually didn't know what was happening at the club at the time, that we really were close to going out of existence before Farnell was removed as a director. The fans, yeah, I mean, look, us three know that we live and breathe this club. Like, comes like Saturday afternoon, we're buzzing for the game. We can't wait for it to start. Come Sunday, we brush ourselves down. Monday morning, we're ready again for Saturday. We're thinking, what's the result going to be? So, yeah, I think it was echoed on social media a lot that they picked the wrong fans, and we showed them. We showed them that, and we kept protesting. And I think it's a bit of a miracle that someone like Thomas has showed up and kind of got these lawyers in and gone, here we go, I'll work out a way of getting this club. And long may that continue. Like, fair play to him for getting it underneath these guys, because it didn't seem like happening otherwise. But yeah, the fans have played a huge part in it. And hopefully, as Thomas has seen, that us fans are ready to back him and hopefully he'll back Bowyer and we can go forward from here.
Yeah, Twitter on Friday afternoon for once as a Charlton fan was a nice place to be. Obviously everybody celebrating, the WhatsApp groups went into meltdown. I was very emotional about the whole thing, and I know I wasn't alone in that. Sangard starts popping up on TalkSport. We saw a photo of him and Ben Ransom for Sky, who's been tracking this very closely. Rich Corley has a word with him. The club do the interview, which you can see on Valley Pass. And we'll just hear a brief clip now from BBC London, I think. So you can hear the whole interview on their streaming service. But in this clip here, Thomas explains what he's going to do differently from all those who have come before him.
Well, I have a very clear strategy for how we're going to get there. And it's going to take about 11, maybe 12 years to get there, to get to the point where we're beginning to play European football. So it's not an overnight thing. And a very clear path as to how to get there. The good news is Lee Bowyer and I, we communicate really well, and we are totally on the same page in terms of how to build the team from here and to a Premiership level. So that is that's already out of the way. And again, as I mentioned before, unlike the previous owners, obviously Roland du Châtelet had the financial means to invest in the club if he wanted to. He was involved in many other things, other football clubs too. So I think the strategy when it came to Charlton became a little diluted and muddied. Obviously, in my case, I would have the financial strength, and I'll make sure that it's 100% dedicated to build the club. It's got a fantastic foundation, and I know that you two guys know about that already. And you know what, this is not too complicated. So I'm actually not too worried. I think it's about focusing on the club. Make sure we also listen to the fans, because if there's any club in England that where the fan base is very vocal and supportive behind the team, both in form of numbers but also in terms of how vocal they are, that's Charlton, and it's amazing. So we'll absolutely make sure that that we listen to the fans. We won't ignore that might be one of the things that didn't go so well here in the past.
Will you bring in a CEO, Thomas, to run the football club on the ground, do you think?
I've been looking at a lot of that, obviously, leading up to this, and getting into it, getting to know it. What I'm seeing is that we have changed the bylaws so that there's only one member of the board of directors to begin with, and I will personally also get in and be the CEO. This is the kind of stuff I'm good at, regardless of industry, is to come in and simplify things, see what's really, really going on and what's needed. And you probably just add one too many layers of delay and a risk of miscommunication. So I'll be in there just trying to work with what we have and just slowly over the next many years tweak things. It's really just a matter about tweaking the dials to make sure that we've removed bottlenecks and miscommunication and get the right kind of philosophy. And that's really my responsibility to bring a culture that really is what the type of culture that I represent, bring that into the club and make sure we all are moving in the right direction. If this organization, whether it's the football side that's led by Lee Bowyer, and Steve Gallen, or it's the staff, if we all are running in the same direction, we're going to make miracles happen.
So there you go then, Thomas Sangard talking about stability, talking about bringing the ground and the training ground together and the long-term plan. Nath, he talks about wanting to be involved, and he's installed himself as the CEO. He wants to be very hands-on, and he says that, you know, it's his skill set that he's had in other things that he's done and simplifying it. I think, you know, the answer to this question I already know, but how important is stability after everything that's come before us? And is that the most important thing now? I know you talked about the fact that, look, we're all wanting promotion and we're all wanting to move ahead, and we'll talk about his longer term plan in a second. But for the moment, given everything that's happened over the past few months and years, is it just a bit of stability and an owner who takes a bit of interest and pride in the club.
Yeah, of course he is. I think he elaborated quite a lot on, you know, stability and, you know, his vision, which, yeah, we'll wait and see on that. But I mean, he's the way he talks about the stability is a key thing for me. He also mentioned in the interview with Ollie on the site, in terms of it was a learning curve. He said he's still learning. He's learning a lot. He went round, you know, the club and spoke to many different people, learning, you know, what they do, and straight away you're thinking, well, you know, he's something different than what we've had before. You know, looking at the other owners we've had with the 2% sort of quote and all that sort of nonsense, but he does look like he wants stability, and he does come across as, look, I mean, obviously we was talking about it with when you said when you was there for the Donny game. And he got an ovation, and he was you could see he was emotional when he was choked up, even in the interviews, you know, with the Ben Ransom one on Sky. You know, he just said it was one of his best days of his life. And for someone to say anyone can say it, I know they can, but you can tell by the way he says it, the way he looks, he actually means it. And I think the stability for us right now is something that we need. Especially after the last few seasons, we've gone through the mire a little bit. Obviously, Wembley, obviously excluding the Wembley, because obviously that was a mad day. But we do need that stability now, and I think it's time to let Bowyer manage the team and improve the players. Is what he's paid to do. Bowyer shouldn't be having to juggle the backroom staff. You know, that'll be down with Thomas and obviously Steve Gallen. And yeah, I think he will bring stability and let Bowyer do what he's good at. And it just seems like a fresh start. And I'll say again, it's not a 1 week project. It's not going to change overnight, but it's something that every one of the listeners, every single fan, whether they protested or not, they wanted to get in this position, and we're in it now. So enjoy the moment, you know, and it's going to be. It's going to be a bumpy ride. You'll have down days and up days like everything, but stability is what I think Thomas will bring. And yeah, we can look forward to it.
Yeah, he talks about his longer term plan as well. He's got obviously the training ground and the valley, I think, are still being leased from Roland, but on a longer term lease that hopefully again gives some stability to that. And hopefully at some point he can look to bring those under his ownership as well. Let's talk about his long-term plan, because we can't stay away from it. You'll have heard in the intro there the Champions League theme tune, a little bit in jest, but that is where he's aiming now. You know, he sees us as a sleeping giant and thinks that in the next 10 to 15 years we could be pushing mid-table, maybe upper part of the table in the Premier League. Benji, like, as a fan, obviously you dream of that again, and we've had the years in the Premier League. Obviously all of us have been lucky enough to see some of that, but realistically, we have seen it happen with teams make the step up from League One and go through those relatively quickly. 15 years is a long time in football. I don't think we can predict it. But do you have confidence in Thomas as someone who can be taken seriously with that aim? Because, you know, we have been burnt a few times before. Do you have any reservations at all? Or are you fully on the Sangar bandwagon and ready to be going away to the likes of Barcelona and Real Madrid in 10 or 15 years' time?
No, definitely reservations. You've got to say that stuff when you come in. Look, if you don't have goals like that, then what's the point of getting involved at a club? But yeah, as you said, we've all been around, lucky enough, we've all been around to see us in the Premier League. And look, that came from a lot of stability at the club. That came from us knocking on the door, 96, 97, 98, and finally getting through the playoffs and winning. But then, look, we got relegated again and we came back again. That come from a lot of stability in the club, in the boardroom. So it needs that. It needs him now to... I know, as you said earlier, he's appointed himself as CEO at the moment. It needs him to be able to appoint people underneath him to make the right decisions. So under Roland, we had Catrienne, which... I don't feel that she realised the enormity of her job at the time. So I think he needs to chat with someone like Peter Varney and ask him how he did it at the club when he was at the club. A very stable time. Just talk to heads around the club. Look, Keith Peacock's around the club. Talk to him. He was the assistant manager at the club when we did well. But yeah, look, he said the right things. Now we're all so cautious thinking, okay, we've heard this before. I'm not sure if Roland said the Champions League thing, but look, we've heard this before from people. Let's just have some stability for a while. We don't need you to chuck millions at the club, papering over the cracks. We need to do that slowly, step by step. Talk to Boya, talk to Jacko, talk to Steve Gallen and think, right, where can we improve this season? We've got, a couple of weeks. I think we get a little bit extra for the transfer window. Maybe pick up some frees here and then, but let's build on this season. Okay, we haven't started the best, but we never were going to under the circumstances we're in. And just try and slowly pick up now. There's a lot to paper. There's a lot of cracks in the club, as I said. We need to slowly just get there. But yeah, great words so far. Look, we've taken to him. He seems the best of what was out there. And it does seem a bit surreal that he did want to get into our club when so many others tried and weren't successful. So not on the bandwagon yet, because we've seen it before, but let's definitely a lot more positive about him than many others.
And even in his interview the other day, he did reference the fact that actions speak louder than words, which is something we've said about a lot of the previous owners who have come and gone very quickly. He has made some actions already, as I mentioned in the intro. The embargo was immediately lifted, and he moved quickly to secure two signings. Nath, I'll bring you in first to talk about the first one. Ben Watson from Nottingham Forest for the season. 35, I think he is now, so experienced head, but some player to bring in at League One level. What do you make of that signing, first of all?
Well, very shrewd one. I think he played in all but one of Forest's games last year, and they missed out literally on the last game of the season. So he's a season pro, scored in the FA Cup final against, I think it was against Man City, correct me if I'm wrong, but obviously he's a local lad, obviously played at Palace. He still lives around the area. So he's probably a move which has sort of felt nice, you know, fell quite nicely for him as well, coming back down to London. But yeah, I think I think what we did lack at some points, especially last year, if you think back, the amount of late last-minute goals that we conceded. Not saying, you know, he's going to prevent that, but when you're looking around the pitch and, you know, if Piercy weren't there or if Pratt's weren't available, you know, we didn't really have, a team of leaders. And I think that he brings that, whether or not Watson and Prattley will be one of each, or if Prattley might slot into the bench like he did today and he'll come on, I don't know. But I think it's a great signing for this level, because I'm pretty sure he probably would have had some offers from Championship clubs, especially ones that have just been promoted to the Championship. So yeah, I think it's a great signing for us. Plays it simple, tenacious. You know, he's smart. He knows how to play the game. Even today, I mean, he made a tactical foul when we were cut open at one point because of the position of Jake. But it's things like that where you don't really notice it. But he's reading of the game, and at this level, it's a very, very, very good signing. And it's quite. I don't know how they did it. I don't know. Obviously, Steve's got good relationships across his network, but. Yeah, no, it's a great little signing for us, and be looking forward to seeing him play. The only game that he didn't probably play so well last year was when Ozzy sort of tore him apart against Forest, but when we probably played our best last year. But no, great signing for League One level for sure.
Excellent stuff. And Benji Akinfenwo came in on loan from Norwich. We all know that we need defenders and probably still do. And he's a youngster, so he's someone who's learning. So perhaps not the experience, but based on today's performance in particular, he looks as a very assured player on the ball. I think he can be fairly pleased with his debut. And another signing to hopefully strengthen the back four, to take a bit of the pressure off the likes of Prattley having to play there or young Charlie Barker. So another good signing to get through the door early on, you'd think.
Yeah, I guess people are a bit underwhelmed with that, because I can't say I've ever heard of him before. But going by today's performance, I was really impressed by him. He didn't shy away. He kept wanting the ball from goal kicks. He seemed quite assured on the ball. I can't say he was involved in us conceding any of the goals today. But, yeah, good debut. I've got a few family members that are from Norwich. So I texted one of them and he immediately texted me back and he said, yeah, that guy's our future. Really good centre-back. And I know Norwich's academy has done really well over the last few years. And I think a few have been bought in this window. You've also had, I think, Barcelona after one of their right-backs at the moment. So he's come from a good academy. And look at what we do with loan players. I mean, as you're going by last season, Lecco and Gallagher, just to name two of them, done really well. And now Gallagher's in the Premiership. Lecco's been signed up by Birmingham. So, look, we do well with loan players. But getting in a centre-back early doors from Sangar coming in is good, because that was the main position with Jason Pearce out injured, Prattley slotting in, as you said. He's a big guy, looked like quite a muscly guy. You need those kind of players in League One, because it's that kind of league where you need some strength. You're going to get bustled about there. But yeah, good promising debut by him, I must say.
Excellent stuff. So hopefully this spells the end of ESI. Rich Corley tweeted on Friday that Paul Elliott probably isn't going to go quietly, and obviously the court case is upcoming. But let's just very quickly discuss the roller coaster that has been ESI. I'll bring you in first, Nath. What's been your highlight of their regime? I mean, there's been a lot of stuff that's gone on, and I'll list some of them.
Which one?
Yeah, what are you going to go for first?
Oh, jeez. I don't know how long we got. Is this a four-hour special, is it? I don't know. I think there was a few quotes, weren't there, really? I think the premium Lugue. I don't know what league that is, but that sounds interesting. Wherever that is, probably the moon or something. But that was one. I think obviously the Range Rovers and the Beeps probably is probably up there. But I just think I mean, obviously at the time it was funny, but it wasn't. But now you can laugh at it because it's done. But there was so much. I think like the deadline day where they spent about, when he went down Poundland. Old Matt Southall went down Poundland and bought a couple of, you know, couple of packs of Brannigans and some Frazzles and some, I don't know, Tango, whatever it was. But yeah, and it was just, you know, the super duper phone. Like, it was just, the super duper phone when we was in under an embargo, it just makes such a mockery of it, doesn't it? But there was so much of it. It's just hard to, like, even now I'm trying to think, but they're the ones that stick out in my mind. But I don't know if Benji's got any more, but I'm sure loads of fans are probably tweeting it now with loads of different ones. But yeah, no, I think the premium Lugue and the super duper phone on transfer deadline stuck out for me as the funnier one, shall we say.
I'll bring you in a second, Benji. I mean, Southall, there was rumours of Southall hiring a hitman at one point. There was his £100 haircut. Apparently he told some people that he was going to organise a friendly against Barcelona. He got chairman spray painted on the car park, but spelt it wrong. Tanoon on Insta, just in general, was good fun. The night, obviously, in the boardroom, I've got Southall claiming his Twitter was hacked. Southall going on Talksport and getting ripped by Simon Jordan. Benji, I don't know if you can think of any others, or maybe I've covered it all. But what was your favourite moment of the ESI era?
The bit that I got most excited about, which I think most fans did, was when he went on Sky Sports News and said he'd met up with Darragh McAntony, the Peterborough chairman, and said, of course we've chatted about those two players, i.e. Ivan Toney and Marcus Madison. And we're like, wow, we're going to get these two guys in? This will be amazing. Oh, yeah, of course I've chatted about them, but, well, I can't chat too much yet. And you had Darragh McAntony actually saying on Twitter at the time, oh, yeah, we did speak about it. And it's like, we're under an embargo, mate. And Tony's ended up going Brentford for 10 million. And Southall's only put in a pound. It's like, unbelievable. He was just living in a dreamland. I mean, really was. And I think you guys have mentioned it so well enough already. I also remember do you remember he did a little competition on Twitter saying, oh, I'll give away a prize to anyone who can guess the next signing.
I remember that.
And the answer was a guy that QPR weren't playing, who was on loan from Man City and no one had heard of. I mean, unbelievable. I really do think the guy was living in a dreamland sometimes, because how on earth could we have signed Maddison and Tony when we had no money to sign them with? And we're under an embargo. So, yeah, as Nave said, you look back now and you can laugh, but at the time it was thoroughly depressing.
Tom, so, yeah, I remember, Tom, with your, I mentioned it on Twitter the other day about the Simon Jordan thing. I watched it again last night, and it was just so funny because it was such a simple question. Simon Jordan was like, well, so who's bridging the funding gap? And then Matt Southall's like, Simon, mate, it's quite difficult to answer. And Simon was like, well, no, because it's either someone's put money in and writing checks or it's funded by its own cash flow, isn't it? And he was like, nah, it's not as easy as that. And Simon's like, yeah, it is, mate. It's one of two. You've two options. That's, all right, mate. It was just funny at the time, but it just shows, doesn't it? Like, really, it's just quite embarrassing, really. But obviously, looking at his LinkedIn profile, he's an experienced football executive, isn't he? So, good luck to your next venture, wherever that may be. Hopefully, you don't get one, because it wasn't very fun for any of us at Charlton. So,
played his part in the sale to Thomas Sandgaard, Matt Southall. I think we'll draw a line under it there. For the first time in years, we can draw a positive line under a takeover and ownership discussion. We're going to have a quick break here on Charlton Live. And when we come back, unfortunately, we've got to discuss some sad news about the passing of another member of the Charlton family. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cullen trying to take his man on. Chip ball back across. Bowers there. Pierce is there. Bowers with a header. And it's Charlie.
Yes! Oh, it's in!
Oh, he's got it! Oh, Patrick Barr! You absolute German beauty! Woo! Dreamland! Charlton have scored! With seconds remaining!
We've done it, Tom!
Get in! Come on! What a time to be a hero!
Here at Wembley!
Oh, my word! Oh, my word!
Charlton Live.
So welcome back to Charlton Live on Sunday the 27th of September. We're going to look at the Lincoln defeat in a second. But before we do, I referenced it just before the break. We were all saddened to hear about the passing of Steve Clark yesterday following a short battle with cancer. A supporter for over 50 years, Steve was chair of the CAFC Supporters Club in the early 90s. A huge part of the Valley campaign that eventually saw our return to SE7. Subsequently, the first supporter director of CAFC, serving on the board, I think, for 2 or 3 years in the early 90s. A supporters trust member and chair, he was at the forefront of attempts to engage in dialogue with Roland. He represented the trust in a number of areas over the years, an immensely popular figure. Anyone who was at the Woolwich Town Hall meeting a few years ago to discuss the club will remember he was there, trying to control a group of Charlton fans who were very, very angry. The outpouring of emotion across Twitter just in the short space of time in the past few days just shows what a character he was. And the thoughts of everyone at Charlton Live are with Steve's family, friends and colleagues during this difficult time. We're going to take another quick break and then we will start to look ahead to the Lincoln game.
This space on the right-hand side for Alfie Doughty now in the penalty area. This is a huge chance for the Alex, and it's Alfie Doughty who puts Charlton into the lead with a calm left-footed finish. It was a wonderful ball through to the youngster, and he pulled it in onto his left foot and slides it beyond the goalkeeper. It's Crewe Alexandra nil, Charlton Athletic 1.
Charlton Live.
So welcome back to Charlton Live. As I say, unfortunately, we do have to talk about today's defeat to Lincoln, 2-0 away up in Lincolnshire. Very quickly, Benji, I'll bring you in first. You've seen the game. Probably wasn't our best, but not the most important thing that's happened to the club this weekend. What did you make of the performance?
First half, I thought we played well. Similar story with having good chances and not taking them. And also a similar story of getting round the box and just not knowing what to do with it. No one who can make that clinical pass. Pleased that Odzuma started because I feel like we did need someone like that playing, him or Johnny starting, to just bring us that creativity in the middle, just behind the front three. But Connor had that chance after 4 minutes. If he that just goes wide of the post, he takes that, then that's a massive change in the game. But look, they've won both of their games going into this game. I listened to a lot of previews for the season coming up, and a lot of people touted Lincoln to have a good season. I think they're a good side under Michael Appleton, and we knew it was going to be a tough game, especially with our squad at the moment, especially at the back. But first half, I thought we played well. I thought it was just a case of, again, not taking our chances. And obviously, I'm sure we'll go into talking about it in a minute, the big contentious decision. But conceding the goal just before half time is obviously the worst thing that can happen. But just frustrating first half, I'd say. Very frustrating.
Not for the first time this season. We didn't take our chances. I think we'll have a quick listen to the highlights now. So this is the highlights of the game up in Lincoln. Your commentators for the game on Valley Pass were, of course, Terry Smith and Greg Stubley.
Good touch from Ayoma, but it runs into Washington. It's a goal! It's a glorious charge from Washington. It was Ayoma with the header that went backwards. Washington pounced on it, cut inside, and that shot looked like it was destined for the right-hand corner, went just past the post. Allows the ball to go back to Amos, who sends it forward. Bond doesn't get there, but it'll run through to Doughty. He's got Washington ahead of him. Doughty still in possession, goes for the shot under pressure. And Doughty is saying illegal pressure. Referee's not having any of it, and it's a goal kick. It's a break cut, that's a sliding tackle from Prattley. Referee lets it go. Surprise for me, but Doughty then picks out Ostema, edge of the penalty area. Ostema on his left foot, takes the shot, palmed away in Washington's path. Can he turn? He can't get it under control, but maybe Doughty can in the penalty area. On the left-hand side, behind him is Purrington. Purrington, back to Doughty again, takes his man on. Ball, great cross in, go beyond everybody and find Barker. Can't bring it down, can't find the space for a shot, trying to make it, little chip ball back, headed clear, and then Brigcut completes the clearance, but only as far as Oshalaja. Oshalaja, touch to his right and Levitt. Levitt's got Barker outside on the touchline. Right-hand side, little ball into Ostema, gets it back, Barker. Levitt, now, ball into the box, great looking ball for Washington. That's a lovely ball, he's onside, but there's nobody close. Back across to Bond, can he get it under control, Macaulay Bond? Tees it up, takes the shot. Ostema, but it's blocked away, but Charlton still have it with Levitt. Piling on the pressure, Prattley out to Doughty on this left-hand side. Clears it out of play for a Charlton throw, which Perrington will take. Throws forward to Bond, holds up the ball. Reverse ball picks out Perrington, crossing opportunities inside the penalty area now. Perrington on a bit of a run. He's still got it, the Charlton left-back, being forced out wide to Doughty. Doughty, ball in the box, a decent look one towards the far post, and Ostema heads down. Washington can get another control win, pulls it back, but it's cleared away, and as far as Prattley with a shot, and it's a difficult half volley that goes harmlessly wide out for a goal kick. Plenty of bodies on the edge of the pounds here, and movement now. Ostema drills it towards the far post. Levitt strikes. Oh, it takes the deflection off a Lincoln player. Goal bound as well from Dylan Levitt. I'd like to know if that was on target, because I'm not sure the keeper was getting across if it was.
Caught it well. He's evidently doing something good in training. Charlton take the corner short this time. Doughty
backwards to Levitt again in space. It's a poor first touch. It's an awkward hit. He hits it. It's a deflection. Ooh. All just wide.
Dear, oh dear.
The first touch wasn't the best from Levitt, but he hit it really well and took a deflection. Could have gone anywhere and just creeps past the post. Charlton corner. Pressure Doughty, he's done well to evade the challenge of Bridcut. Now needs to try to find out, and it's a good interception from Lincoln that comes forward to Anderson. It's a great challenge from Prattley, and now Doughty on the run. Doughty, ball in the box. Oh, it might work his way to Ostermer. It has Ostermer onto his right foot. Ostermer shoots. It's a block. A great block as well by Jackson. Ostermer got it out of his feet onto his right foot. Didn't hit it too cleanly, but still goal-bound and a goal-saving block.
That'd be nice left by Jackson.
Charlton growing in this game, chance after chance at the moment. And it's then we have the corner. Ostermer short to Levitt onto his left foot. It's been forced backwards by Lincoln all the way to Barker. And chip it in towards the far post. Perrington's there. Can he get on the end of it? He heads wide. That's a chance.
It is a
He's
chance.
Stretching
I thought he was
in fairness,
well,
and he was onside. It's a free kick from Grant. It's a decent looking delivery, and it's oh, missed oh, everyone at the back post. Oh, the referee's given a penalty.
What?
The referee must have spotted something that I didn't see at first glance.
Is it a pull?
Push on someone. One added minute given here, just as Lincoln awarded a penalty. Those are the benefits of replays can see, can tell us what they might have spotted. It was Grant with a free kick. It was a dangerous ball into the box. Whether there was a pull back or... Well,
Prattley was the one that was tackling, I think it was Hopper, and I can only think that's the challenge he's given it for.
It's George Grant with the penalty for Lincoln just before half-time. Referee blows his whistle. Grant steps up, and it's a save by Ben Omos. The rebound, it'll come back
it's
to Grant.
Got to offside. It's offside. He's got to be offside. He has to be offside.
There's claims of offside.
He has to be.
The Charlton players are furious.
How can he not be?
There's a deflection off of Anderson, and Grant taps it in, and the referee and the linesman are going to discuss this. Whether he doesn't realise that's come back off of Anderson, it certainly looks offside on first glance. Charlton are absolutely furious with the linesman. It's whether he was level, but
it has to be offside, doesn't he?
They've given the goal.
Oh, man.
And I don't know what the discussion was. If the player's in an offside position, he has to be offside. Anderson gets a touch on the ball. He's unless there was a Charlton player at the far post that was playing him on. Again, we haven't got the benefits of replays. Charlton are absolutely furious. They're probably furious with the original penalty decision. They're probably furious that that is not offside. Controversy here. Ben Amos saved the penalty. And Darren Prattley is still furious with the referee.
Ryan has to go backwards to Grant. Grant with Ostermer in front of him. Looks for the big switch across to the far side of Anderson. Anderson. Ball into the box. It's a dangerous one and Grant can only get there but steer it comfortably wide of the post, to be honest. But a dangerous ball in that needed any sort of touch. Oshelager and Levitt combined from the throw and it's into Ostermer again. Ostermer looking for options. None immediately available. He rides one challenge and then lovely ball out to Purrington on the left-hand side. Instant ball into the box. Looking for runners and it just couldn't run through to Washington. Cleared away by Jackson. It'll be a Charlton throw on the far side. Oshelager meets the free kick on the edge of the penalty area. And that is the final whistle. Bit of a case of after the Lord Mayor's show for the Addicts.
So there we go then, Naif, the highlights, if you can call them that, of the game. Benji said it before, the highlights, a game of missed chances. And in those highlights there, I think 5 of the 7 minutes were chances that took place in the first half. And really, as Benji said, we just, again, didn't take our chances in a game where neither side dominated. It always felt like their best chance was going to come from a set piece, and that's what happened. And we'll come to the goal in a second, but... Yeah, just again, too many missed chances from our side.
Yeah, of course. I think, so we were saying it on Twitter earlier, that they were only going to score from a set piece, which they did. Both of their goals were through set pieces, I think. It was a corner, I think. But difficult, really. It was disappointing. I think first half, and up and, you know, for the majority of the half, you know, we were on the attack. We were creating good chances. Like Benji said, you had the Connor shot, you had the Purrington header, you had, Dylan had a couple of pops, and. You know, we were shadowing Leon Bridcutt, so they weren't really getting on the ball, and they could only go long, and we were squeezing them, and it was coming straight through either to Deji or to Akinfenwa. So we started well, and it's similar to the Donny game where we was in control, we were creating chances, and then we conceded the first goal. And obviously the poor excuse of officiating obviously led to the goal. But the disappointing thing for me is when something like that happens, if anyone plays football, when something like that happens and you think the world's against you, usually it G's you up a bit, you know. And I just thought we could have probably used that to probably, that we were, you know, we weren't poor in the second half. We just lacked a bit of quality in the final third. And I was just disappointed we didn't use that, be aggressive enough, move it quicker. And and I think obviously Boza alludes to it in his post match about getting another striker in, but it's obviously where we're lacking at the moment. I think the middle, you know, midfield, we're fine. We controlled the game for large parts of today. But yeah, we just didn't take chances. And if you're going to win this league, or at least do well in it, you're going to need someone who scores. And obviously the last time we were in it, we had Carlin, we had Lyle, but we ain't now. So people have got to start stepping up and taking the chances, because you're not going to get away with it every week. And no disrespect to Lincoln, they're a good side. And, you know, as Benji says, a lot of people have said they're going to do well, but you probably will have a lot of other teams. You know, look at our next two games, Sunderland, Ipswich. You might not get as many chances as we did today against those sort of teams. So we really need to start being a bit more ruthless in front of goal.
But despite the fact we didn't take our chances, we'll still feel very, very hard done by to fall behind. Benji, we've seen bad refs at this level before. We know Terry loves any opportunity to give a ref an earful from the commentary gantry, but the free kick, first of all, was slightly contentious. The penalty then, equally, potentially, possibly, couldn't be given. But then the penalty's taken and saved well from Ben Amos. And the ball comes back in from the other player and is eventually tapped in for the goal. I mean, how? What has happened there for that goal to be given? Over to you.
Thanks. As I think I've read Bowyer's comments after the game, it was just pure guesswork from the linesman. He's literally not in a position. His head's all over the spot. Oh, keeper saved it. Us come out to him. Oh, yeah, go on then, we'll give it. It's just you can't do guesswork. I mean, unbelievable. It was, in my eyes, you don't really see those kind of penalties given in the first place. I haven't seen too much of a replay of it, but at the time, I think it's Prattley, the nearest guy to him. They go down. It's a great save by Amos with his feet to flick it up. And at first you're like, yeah, it's in there. And then you sit back and go, oh, no, he's offside, surely. And especially the reaction from the team. And the ref went over and spoke to the linesman. I mean, what are they asking each other? I mean, is the ref going, did you see it? Like, were you online at the time? But no, I mean, even the Lincoln player at the time, you look, when it goes in, he's kind of a bit coy going, yeah, probably not a goal, is it? And then he goes away thinking, oh, I have scored. Yeah, a kick in the teeth. But as Bo said, look, the officiating doesn't control us in the final third when we're around. And as Nath so rightly said as well, look, that should have really spurred the bad decision like that. Hopefully, you think it would spur us on to kind of think, oh, look, that was injustice. Let's go down second half and show them why we shouldn't be behind in this game. But we didn't. And that was the worst bit about it, really.
Nath, VAR comes in for a lot of criticism in the Premier League, particularly mm-hmm. after a couple of the handball decisions we've seen this weekend. I know Bowyer has called for it at the lower levels. Without VAR, if the referee and the linesman haven't seen it, is there any way that they can change that decision? Because you can't just go on what the players are saying. They both probably know as they walk off that pitch that they might have made a mistake. But if they haven't seen it, is there anything that they can do to give us that goal?
I know this ain't a Spurs show. I looked at the Spurs one earlier. Absolutely. He's back's to the ball. How's he going to see it? I think the only way you can deal with this handball thing is chop your arms off. Honestly, I think it's unbelievable how convoluted it's made it. But in terms of the decision making, like, listen, I'd never be a ref. You know, my old man assesses refs, and I said I'd never do it. It's an odd job, But if De Gea is 2 yards offside, it's not even like marginal. You can't even go, it's his armpit. Or, you know, it's his big toe. It's, mate, it's 2 yards. But the thing is, the thing that makes it worse is, like, you go and talk to the gazer and they're going to guess, right? Go and guess. But the thing is all you need is to just go, right, let's use our logic. And Bose sums it up. If you use common sense and logic, you know it's offside. You know it's physically impossible. Unless you got Usain Bolt, you know it's physically impossible for that not to be offside. But the lineup's a plum. But it is what it is, right? We can't change it. Like Ben just said, that penalty decision, yeah, it could change the dynamic of the game and it swings momentum, blah, blah, blah. But we were poor in both boxes. But I mean, changing the thing is the VAR. You might get VAR in the championship because, you know, it's a lot of money to lose out on and stuff like that. But I'll be amazed if you ever see VAR League One, League Two, National, Vanarama National. I'll be amazed. But okay, fine. But decisions like that's a simple. If they just took 30 seconds of, right, let's follow this step by step, and just applied logic. Of, you know, just general, not even like football knowledge, it's just logic, it's distances. And like, if you applied that to that decision, that decision would never happen. It's 0-0 at half time, done, sorted. Then we wouldn't be sitting here now. And then obviously the second goal, don't know what Deji was doing, is what it is. And then we didn't defend our lines properly. But I just don't know. The only way you're going to get through it is is by applying logic, but they're not going to get everything right. We know that, but it's the decisions like that infuriate fans because it's so obvious. It's so obvious. But I don't think it just seems when we come into this league, it just seems like the standard's dropping, you know. But I'm not using that, like I know we've all said, I'm not using that as an excuse for us losing today because we weren't good enough in the final third. The build up play was fine, you know, from box to box, going between the lines was fine. It was just that final bit of quality that we lacked, and that's what lost us the game. Because if we had that composure in front of goal, we would have been probably 3-0 up by the time that penalty thing happened. But you know, like I know it's cliche, but we just have to, you know, forget about today, and then we'll just move on to our next two fixtures, which are going to be very, very tricky.
You both referenced how we started the second half, and you think those players going off angry at half time, as you said earlier, Nath, you think that would fire them up, but we were very sluggish when we came out, and Boya tried to change things up. He brought Johnny Williams on, who took about 10 minutes before he really was able to get a run at the Lincoln back four. He brought Ben Watson on as well, but there was really very little impact by any of the subs, I didn't think. Benji, I'll bring you back in to talk about the second goal. I mean, a mistake from Deji Oshalaja, there's no other way to say it, passing it straight out of play. But we don't defend the corner either. And it's a simple header for Lincoln's top goal scorer. The man we should, if we're going to mark one player, that should be the man we mark, but we don't. In terms of the mistake, first of all, do you put that down to the fact that Deji hasn't played a lot of football? Ben hasn't played a lot of football? There might not be that communication there. Or is it just an inexcusable mistake and you can't be making that whatever level of football you're in?
Yeah, it's as you say, it's a combination of a lot of things. I didn't think Ben had a good game when he came on, Ben Watson. I think he looked really behind the play, looked quite sluggish. But that's going to be the case. He hasn't played football for a while, like proper football. He might have been training with us for a little while, apparently, but it just, yeah, the two subs that came on, they're not properly fit yet, Johnny and Ben. And hopefully we've got this game coming up in the week against Brighton in the EFL Trophy. These guys can get valuable minutes under their belts and we can try and get a team that's match ready. But as you said, Deji didn't feature too much last season. It was poor. It's poor from him. And the marking's even worse. I mean, Ben Watson, again, unfortunately, was marking this guy and he doesn't even jump. He's like literally backtracking and he's got a free header at the far post. And as you said, this is their top scorer. This is the guy we're supposed to be marking at corners. So, yeah, you thought 1-0, we still might snatch a draw. But after that, again, last week against Doncaster, we give them the first goal, and Bo, I'm sure, will be telling them after the game, come on, we've given them that goal. We've passed it out for a corner, and we've not marked them. We've made it too easy for them. And as we said earlier, Lincoln are a force to be reckoned with in this league this season. They're going to be up there in the top 10. It's a tough place to go for whatever team. So that's it. They're going to be there. So we need to be... can't be giving goals to these kind of teams because they're going to take them. And unfortunately, we're not taking them down the other end. So if we're not going to be scoring at the other end, we need to make sure we're going to be harder to break down at the back. But at the moment, we don't have the players to do that. So again, I think it's a combination of match fitness and just players not linking up with each other. They don't know each other yet.
I think that... It even goes back to maybe last season. I think the difficulty for me is what I've seen so for the three games this year and some of last is if we concede first, hand on heart, can I see a score of two to get back? Not usually, but I mean today was so different that we were so dominant in creating the chances. I said at half time, I said if we keep playing the way we do, we'll score easily two, at least two. But we just didn't maintain that level. The build-up play maybe, but the chances we fashioned, it wasn't really good enough. And I just think once we get some players in, it's going to take a couple of weeks for it to bed in. But I said on Thursday, I'm not really getting too stressed at the moment because I think without the proper pre-season and that, I think it's going to be 5, 6, 7 games until things start really falling into place and people start picking up a bit of form, because there's so much stuff that there's so many sort of factors that's so different from usual, you know, from usual. And obviously this year you're probably going to have a lot more Saturday Tuesdays than we usually have. But yeah, we'll just have to go on to the next one and just write this weekend off apart from Friday.
I was going to say Friday is the focus, and let's draw a line under the game because I don't want to be miserable for any longer. And let's hear from Lee Bowyer, who, understandably frustrated after the game, but surprisingly not too miserable and trying to find the positives in the performance. He'd spoke to the Assorted Press after the game, and this is what he had to say.
Lee, a 2-0 defeat at Lincoln today. What are your overall views after that?
I've just said to the players that I have to try and take some positives from that. Obviously, the result is not the result that we want, but I think we was by far the better team, by far. But if you don't do the right things in both boxes correctly, then you're going to lose the game. We should have been 2-3 up easily before they got that penalty. And okay, the first goal should never have been a goal anyways, miles offside, 2 yards offside. Decisions like this game, I don't know, maybe the game's changed, but some of them decisions I'm seeing out there today, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable what was going on. But they're not at fault, the officials, for what we do in the opposition box. We can't... Have we not scored? Have we not scored a goal again today? For as long as that keeps happening, you ain't going to win games. It's plain and simple. Keep missing chance after chance after chance. Then they go and get a penalty. And then they go in at one up at half time when they shouldn't be. And then second half, I thought we was the better side again, second half. But again, we're getting into these great areas. And it's not as if like we're not even picking the right pass. We are. But then we're just not finishing. Keep working on finishing a lot. But then you can't control it. When you come to games, you need to have that same coolness, and we ain't having that. So yeah, I'll take a lot of positives from it. I thought Dylan, his first proper league game, I thought there's a lot to be happy with his performance, his range of passing and awareness. And Akin playing centre half, obviously had to bring him off. He hasn't played many minutes. So, like I said before, we'll get stronger and stronger as it goes on. But you can't just be coming away from here with absolutely nothing. But after that performance, I thought there's a lot of positives from that. We got from box to box very, very well. Moved the ball well. But you can't keep doing that, can't keep missing chances.
Did the officials explain their decision for the goal? Because from up there, I mean, we were surprised to see it given.
It doesn't make no sense what they're saying, though. It makes no sense. The official said, the fourth official said, the linesman, because of where he was standing for the penalty, he couldn't then get back into the position to give the offside quick enough. So then if he would have given offside, he would have been guessing. So I said, OK, but I'm telling you, he's 2 yards offside, so then you've made the wrong decision. So you're guessing that he's onside. Does that not make sense? He's taken the penalty, so as he's running forwards, he's struck the penalty, so he's gone beyond the penalty spot. Well, the fella that gets the rebound is just coming into the 18-yard box. And the fella that took the penalty is the one that scored. So it must be offside. No one can get beyond him who's just taken the penalty quick enough. That's common sense. But he said they would have been guessing. So I said, yeah, but if you're saying you would have been guessing, then you must be guessing that he was onside. Because we're telling you he was miles off. Not even close. 2 yards. It's unbelievable. That was the only thing. I didn't even see Ben. Ben didn't have a shot to make in open play. And then we come away with nothing. But some of the decisions. He's stopping the play. We're breaking on them. And then he's stopping the play because someone got one in the nuts. Like, you can't. That's not a reason to stop the play. You carry on. If it's a head injury or something serious, I understand. Stops it because he took one in the nuts. Like, are you kidding me? Is that a rule? Like, what's that? It's just laughable. Some of the decisions that was made there today was laughable. I've never seen nothing like it. It's crazy. Crazy. The game must be changing. I don't know. See people diving left, right and centre and because someone touches him. Like, if someone touches you, he touched him. What? So if you touch someone now, it's a foul? It's a contact sport. Please tell me it's not changed from a contact sport. But putting that aside, all them decisions, I don't care. What I care about is that we've lost the game and the way we've lost the game. We have to be more ruthless. But I see a lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff. And we keep working hard, and we're going to bring in bodies, and it's going to make us better. So yeah, there's a lot of positives to take from today. Result, no, but a lot of positives.
Yeah, you mentioned those positives. Obviously, you saw a first half Rakin and Ben Watson coming off the bench. You talk about more bodies coming in. Can I ask? I mean, Adam Matthews was one mentioned a few weeks ago. Is he still in and around it? Has he still got a chance?
Yeah, he's in and around it, but that's something that we'll pick up early part of next week. So yeah, we'll pick that up early part of next week. We need to bring in a striker. We need to bring in someone that's going to take them chances that we're creating, because we can't keep doing that, keep missing chance after chance after chance. But we need someone that's going to finish.
And no Albie Morgan today. Obviously, he played last week, but not in the squad today. Is he okay?
He's okay, yeah.
Just a tactical one.
Yeah, he's okay.
Okay. Obviously, you've got the Checker Trade game in midweek coming up, and a chance to get some more minutes, I guess, into some of those new signings.
Yeah. Ben are playing that. Got to get some minutes into him. Obviously, he's had no minutes. Today was the first minutes he's had. So, yeah, he's only been in training with us for maybe a couple of weeks, so that'd be one for him. Some of the younger lads have come back. So, yeah, I'll make a few changes.
Cheers, man. Lee, I was talking to Steve Thompson there for ex-Charlton player and Lincoln player. He said, first half, end of the first half, one of the best sides he's seen us going forward, purposeful and with great intent, just not converting those chances. I know it might not seem like cold comfort, of course, but that second half performance didn't probably create as many clear-cut chances as we did in the first half. That obviously caused for disappointment.
Yeah, we didn't create as many, but I think they just sat deeper and deeper, and there was less space to move. They made it really difficult and sat on the edge of their box most of the half. And we could, but even then, we're getting chances. But a bit more calmness, and like if you hold it up and you're laying it off, make sure it's the right layoff, so then they can finish first time. just in that, in and around that box, we wasn't good enough. And that's where we need to strengthen, for sure.
I was going to say that. Does that change your thinking, or is that already part of your thinking as to the players you're bringing in?
Yeah, I knew that. We had someone here, and then he went back home because things changed in the middle of the week. And that now I'm hoping that we're going to get that back going again and get him into the building next week.
So it could be a busy week. Other than the cup game, Wednesday, it's going to be a busy week for you.
Yeah. It's not going to be no rest time anyway. So never is. But yeah, it's going to be a busy week.
If anything, I mean, I know the week we've had and the good news we've had on Friday. If anything, does this? I wouldn't say safe for the world, but at least you knew already that the work that needed to be done. It just magnifies that today, I guess.
Yeah, just the positive thing is now we can start bringing in bodies, and we've done that already. For Akin, I think we've done really well. So, the most important thing is that we can strengthen. And but the side that was out there today, I thought they'd done a lot of good things, and just didn't get the result that we probably deserve. That's our own fault. Can't blame anybody else for that. Officials done so much, but we just should have still been out of sight in the first half, 2-3 in my eyes. So we'll keep working on.
Cheers.
Thank you.
So there we go then, Lee Bowyer, not happy about the game being stopped for someone being hit in the nuts, but trying to take the positives out of the game. Benji, how worried are you about back-to-back defeats, or like we've spoken about, with the chances we created, with what happened on Friday, with the new signings coming in, are you focused on the positives?
Yeah, totally. For me, mate, I'm not worried at the moment. I'm worried that we look a little bit rusty again up top. I mean, look, that's what relegated us last season. We just couldn't finish our chances. So we need to act fast with that, because as Bowyer said on many occasions, everyone's after a striker, because everyone needs a striker to score you 15 to 20 goals a season. That's what gets you promoted, the goals. And we had that with Lyle, getting him on a free. So now we need to press ahead and get another striker in, whether that striker is a proven striker to push Bon ahead to what we really think he can do. I mean, at the moment, I've been disappointed. He scored that really good goal against Swindon in the first game in the League Cup. But after that, he doesn't look the same striker that we saw towards the end of last season, who looked quite sharp. So that's something that needs addressing. But look, we need players in every position at the moment, particularly a right back, particularly centre backs. But just competition for places. As Nath said earlier, we do look good in the centre of midfield. Unfortunately, I think we've missed a big player today in Alex Gilby. I thought he played really well last week. We missed a player in Chucks as well, a player who came on and looked really good at Swindon. I think he featured in both the goals when he came on to give us the win. Hopefully he's better and well to play again this week against Brighton. But yeah, not too downhearted at the moment. Definitely not. You look at teams in the championships like Nottingham Forest and Derby, who are without 0 points in 3 games. So it's a long way to go. It's a long way to go. But you look at a team that we got promoted with a couple of years ago, we're nowhere near that level. So we need to act. We've got time to do that now. We've got the funds there, we've got the owner there, so hopefully now we can be positive, because yeah, as you said, we don't want to end this show on negative terms. I think today was always going to be a tough game, but look, let's look ahead to the future now, try and get bodies in, try and get these new boys up to scratch like Watson and Akinfenwo, and yeah, hopefully Chucks can come back into the team as well, and yeah, let's look positively ahead, because this is definitely some positive times now we're looking forward to.
Excellent stuff. And just before we move on to tweets and emails, focusing on another positive, Nath, you talked about the midfield controlling large parts of that game. I thought, in particular, Oztuma and Dylan Levitt, in particular, some of the balls he was spraying around in that first half. Benji mentioned Gilby there when he's back fit. Chucks, you'd think in the middle of the park, we've got some positives there, certainly looking forward, and a midfield that should be able to dominate a lot of teams at this level.
Yeah, I don't know who Levitt is. I know Perlow played in the middle, but I think it was Dylan Perlow, I think it was. But no, he was unbelievable. I mean, at first he was playing the first all 5 minutes. He was a bit safe, which was understandable. But then when he got his range of passing in, there was three balls over the top. They were unbelievable. The corner routine, he tried having a pop. But yeah, I think, like you say, I think the central midfield position's fine. I still think seven. I think you need two right backs, a right side centre half, a left back, a striker, and I think we need two wingers because I think we're relying too much on Alfie. I just think we just lack a bit of pace and options, really. I mean, if you looked at the bench today, there weren't really much to change it. I know Johnny's a flair player, but you can't just rely on Johnny to change a game. Dylan Perlow was unbelievable today, and he could be a very good player, and Nakin Fenway had a good game, but it's good. Like once Chucks comes back, we've got a lot of options in there, which would be nice. So if Bowes wants to play the diamond, he can. If he wants to change it up and goes for two wingers to go either side of Maka, but the problem is with a striker, like Benji was saying, to get proven strikers in this country, you're going to pay top dollar, and it depends on what budget Thomas has given him. You can probably get proven strikers from other countries around the world, but we'll just have to wait and see because I'm sure they've got their eyes on a couple. But yeah, no, some good positive performances. And Dylan was a very standout for me. Very, very, very good player.
There you go then, Mr. Sangard. If you're listening, we've only got a few days left of the transfer window, but Nath wants seven players and spending big money, please. Let's move on to some of your tweets and emails. John Munn tweeted in, said, "Proof we need some players. Rome wasn't built in a day, and hopefully we can get some in before the end of the transfer window. Awful officiating too, but then that's fairly standard," which I think we all agree with. Dan Partridge tweets in, "Thought Bonn was particularly irrelevant." Benji referenced that a little bit earlier as well. Pete's AFC, "We can't lose these matches, never mind the poor refereeing. Should have been up at 3-1 in the first half." Again, questioning Maka when on the ball. Ian Catley saying, "So much Deadwood in the team. Bon, Deji, JFC, Ozzy, Williams, Purrington, all never going to be good enough. Need to start again." Benji, I'll bring you in there. I mean, there's some big names in there. The likes of Jake Forster-Kaski, Oztuma, Williams. We've just spoken about us thinking the midfield is pretty solid. Ian Catley disagreeing there. What do you make of that?
I was quite surprised to see JFC not playing today, actually. When he came on, I thought he played well last week. I wouldn't say he's Deadwood. I mean, with JFC, I think he's a player that's obviously suffered with his injuries over the last few seasons. Ozuma, I can't say he's Deadwood. As Nath said earlier, I thought he had a good game. He's someone that hasn't been given the opportunity in a long time. When was the last time he started a game? I think he was unlucky with a couple of chances. I mean, I remember one he took from left foot to right foot, and their guy got a good block, otherwise that was going in. It is hard. Look, we all react early on in the season when things aren't going well, when you see a bad game. Are these players the answers? Well, they haven't got much competition behind them at the moment, so they'll start up in their game, as Boya said, and when the competition arrives, and then we'll see their true selves. So it's early doors. Don't forget, with a lot of teams, we haven't had much of a pre-season either, so teams aren't performing at their best. But you need to work out wins in nitty-gritty ways and the best you can. And we're not doing that at the moment because we're not taking our chances. So, look, let's see how these players do after 10, 12 games before we can judge them just like that.
Excellent stuff. Daniel Basham, "Disappointing second half, unsurprising looking at the squad, but keep the faith." The poster cabin, "Yes, the officials were bad, but we shouldn't have to rely on them. We need to be clinical and start converting our shots. Boya and the boys have got this." I think we largely agree with that. Mark, "Not surprised. Hope the positivity from the takeover would get us the win. Boya's right. We still need half a dozen." So if just five, whereas Nath wants seven. "Decent signings if you want to get promoted back at the first time of asking. Still finishing the week smiling and optimistic, which is very much what we're trying to do on this show." Tom, "The refs were poor, but doesn't excuse the performance today," which is, again, is what we've said. Bon looked uninterested and Deji's pass to Amos led directly to their goal. Hopefully new signings will kick us into gear. Got a few more. Tom van der Peer, as an ex-referee, I found the decision shocking. It's basic stuff for an assistant. You're the eyes for the referee. If you can't get that right, how have you made it to the list of assistant referees? And we have to say, we think maybe the linesman was still making his way back from the penalty, watching the penalty. Cass looked excited and rejuvenated by the takeover first half, but the penalty flattened us and we didn't recover. Awful second half. Bonds had plenty of time to prove himself and for me isn't good enough. Not deserving of our number 9 shirt. Reliable goal scorer needed. Something we've discussed a lot in recent weeks. Paul Evans, poor second half, poor officiating. Kay Valley, really poor performance. If a decent offer comes for Bon, take the money and reinvest. Lots of similar comments from lots of people. I'll just bring in a comment from Garmy Head Chef saying, Mark Newbury, of course, occasionally on this podcast, hoping we get Matthews back to shore up the defence, and maybe a loan of a striker from the Premier League, one of the kids maybe from one of the teams. We've been lucky in loans over the past few years and I have faith in Gallen picking one. Yeah, I know Adam Matthews was certainly someone that we wanted to get back. So we'll wait and see if that happens. We'll move on to your emails. I don't think we're going to get through them all because the show is already comfortably over an hour long, but we will try and run through a few. And thank you so much for getting in touch. But we've had, understandably, so many in the wake of the week we've had. First one that came in was from Thomas van der Peer, who we've just heard from on Twitter. Hey guys, what a Friday that was. What a relief. I'm sure I'm not the only one that will say this, but I can see a future now for our club. Thomas Sandgaard has instilled belief back into us, belief that our club has a future, and I for one am really looking forward to what that brings. But whilst we celebrate our new custodian, let's not forget the reason why we were in such a mess in the first place. EFL still need to be held accountable for everything that's happened and not just to us. EFL need to change the way they govern. They need to protect clubs more. We must continue to make our voices heard, and that's a good point, and we've seen that in recent weeks, the Charlton family pulling together for other clubs, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens to clubs, particularly now that fans aren't being let in for the foreseeable future. So fingers very firmly crossed in that department for sure. Elizabeth Edwins, thank you for your email, Elizabeth. At last, some fantastic news. Makes all those tweets, letters to my MP, protests and tears worth it. You boys have kept us going with your podcasts and commentaries. Well done and thank you. At last, a chance to celebrate. Thanks for your email, Liz. And as you say, letters to your MP, protests. We spoke earlier about how the Charlton family really have pulled together to try and get this deal over the line. Dominic Richardson, thank you for your email, Dominic. It's wonderful to be feeling ecstatic about Charlton Live for the first time in a long while. Of course, there's a long way to go, but if the Sandgaard era goes to plan, it could be quite something, especially with Lee at the helm. What a story it would be if Lee did manage to get us into the Prem. Well, we heard from Lee that that's certainly what he wants to do. Feel a bit sorry for that none of this could have happened in Chrissy Powell's era, but delighted it has now. Have to say though, Thomas Sandgaard talking several times about European football is hard to get my head around. Would be quite something, but would we remain the same club that is Charlton if we did up playing European football regularly? He does say I'm getting a bit of my head of myself. I don't think we need to worry about that just yet, but it could be something that in a few years we can start to think about if we're lucky. Tony Virgo, bad performance today overall, so this is on the game. Of course, patience is needed, and I'm not too bothered about the season as a whole right now. Biggest concern is the centre-half position. Deji just isn't good enough at centre-half, and I'm not sure where he's best played. What do you think? Nath, I'll bring you in here just to talk about Deji. We had a couple of tweets on that as well. I mean, obviously, the mistake is going to single him out for criticism in this game, but just in general, he's going to have a bigger part this season at the moment because of the numbers we've got. What have you made of his Charlton career, if we can call it that, to date and the performances he's had?
It's difficult because I think there was a decent player in there. I think when we used to play Wimbledon, he was a good physical presence. I think the difficulty, if there's any sympathy, if you can call that, for Deji, is I think he's not really had a continued settled position, so to speak. I know last year he's played centre back a couple of times, right back a couple of times. I think he played in defensive midfield once or twice when he first came in, and he's not really been settled in a certain 11, if you can give him that as a sympathy. But I think the thing is, for me, which I think Bo alluded to last week, is because there's no competition for places, people can get complacent. Believe it or not, you can. I think if someone comes in, which is one of my seven, It puts competitions. I mean, if you've got Akinfenwo, Piercy, Deji, and one other, if you don't perform, so if we had someone else in, I'd be surprised if Deji played in the next game, because it's a soft goal to give away. He was under no real pressure. Lack of concentration. It's given a goal away, and the game's dead then. The game's gone. But yeah, he's a good player. I think League One is probably his level. But I just think he just needs to be a bit of a kick up the bum with another signing, really. But I don't think he's a poor player. But I just think we need competition for places so people can focus a lot more. Like the midfield, we've said, you've got loads of competition now. And you can see that because we played well there. Again, strikers, we're light. Wingers, we've got one. Well, Washington's really a winger, really. A winger come striker, he's a bit of both. So I just think competitions will probably help all those positions and make people really fight for their place.
Excellent stuff. Just a couple more before we wrap up. We had a message in from Phil Cullum on Twitter. A momentous week off the pitch, a new owner who certainly looks and sounds what we have been desperately looking for. Good times are hopefully around the corner. However, on the pitch, still a complete mess, he says. I don't know if we would go that far, but certainly not a good performance today. A back four that are clearly not good enough, even with the addition of young Famwo. A midfield that clearly, that although look good on paper, don't contribute enough goals, which is certainly something I think I would agree with. And a front three, all of which should be coming off the bench and not starting. Thomas, Bowyer and Gallen have got a busy couple of weeks ahead. Finally, may I send my condolences to Steve Clark's family. He'll be sadly missed by the Charlton family. And we absolutely echo those thoughts. An email from Steve McLennan. Happy takeover weekend, guys. The first half was decent. Really impressed by Levitt, or Pirlo as Nath has rechristened him, and Famwo on the ball. He is like an upgrade on Naby, and Dylan moved the ball nicely. Can't bring myself to talk about the ref and his decisions, but he went to the Mike Dean School of Arrogance when reffing. The biggest problem with the team right now is the lack of character. If we concede first, we're done. Something, Nath, you mentioned earlier, and something we've referenced a few times. Whether it's the personnel or the mental after effects of relegation, it needs to be addressed. And hopefully the rumoured 7 or 8 signings, Nath will be pleased with that, will add some steel and a fresh air of confidence. Bon was abject again, and to me, him and Alfie look like they've had their heads turned. But who really cares? All that matters is Sandgaard is in, ESI are out, and hopefully we can stop fearing for our club and that constant knot in our stomach disappears. Let's dare to dream and be positive again. I have faith in Thomas and Lee being able to give us a club to be proud of, even if the results on the pitch aren't instant. Come on, you Reds. Great email. Thank you, Steve. And lastly, Derek Tuffley. Thank you, Derek. Predictably disappointing result and performance following the highs of Friday's takeover. Did you let Lee Bowyer and the team hear Thursday's show? The Lincoln journalist you interviewed said if we play keep ball, we'll play into their hands. So what do? We played keep ball unbelievably slowly until there was no space and ended up lumping it forward anyway. Apart from some early incisiveness with Levitt picking out forward runs, we settled too easily into a keep-it-safe mentality, which allowed Lincoln to sit back, mark tight and pick off our long balls. What the broadcast doesn't show is forwards making run after run to give players in possession options. When the ball doesn't come, as increasingly it didn't, they stop making those runs. The balls forward become more desperate and hopeful. It'll be interesting to see who comes through the door to shake things up. Good to be talking about football again. And I do agree with that, although it's a shame to end on a relatively negative review of that performance. But to be honest, there wasn't much positives to take from today's performance against Lincoln. But there was positives to take from this weekend, a weekend which saw Thomas Sandgaard rid the club of ESI and take control of Charlton Athletic. And hopefully we have a bright future ahead. I hope we've done our best to get all of your emails and tweets in, and I think we'll wrap up the show there. So thank you everyone who's got in touch. It's been a momentous weekend in Charlton's history, and hopefully the positives are coming soon on the horizon. Nath and Benji, thank you very much for being on the show this evening.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, mate.
Brilliant stuff. We'll be back on Thursday to look ahead to next weekend, but for now, from me and the guys, it's good night, and have a lovely end of your weekend and a week positive under the new ownership of Thomas Sandgaard. Good night, everyone. We'll be right back.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.